The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. It's our third and final hour together here today on this Thursday, the 28th day of May. This is crazy, man. It's crazy, man. Tomorrow, Friday, the last show that we will do in the month of May. Remember when it was March the 85th? The month that would not end. And then April, May, here comes June. And oh, my gosh, who knows what lies ahead. Well, let me tell you what lies ahead this hour. Just a free-for-all of your thoughts and mine. We got a lot going on. 866-660-5759. I've got a few more things to say about rioting in Minneapolis. I got a few more things to say about the legacy of my friend Sam Johnson. Got a few more things to say about the Texas Supreme Court putting a stop to the insanity of inventing a right to vote by mail. Got a few things to say about the delay of the SpaceX launch. We're ready for Saturday. And gosh, probably a few things it hasn't even occurred to me to say anything about. So why don't you bring it with similar passion? 866-660-5759. Grab a line, anything you want. We're ready to handle you. The first thing I want to play for you is just another minute or two. I am just enjoying hearing Sam Johnson's voice. I have heard this man's voice in my life, in a room where I was standing of some varying size, for more than 20 years. And the latest thing I found here, as we learn of Sam's passing yesterday morning in Plano, this is 2007. Talk about a couple of my favorite members of Congress, speaking of them being in the same room. Up in the 4th District of Oklahoma, one of my favorite members of Congress for, again, about 20 years, has been the great Tom Cole. And Oklahoma's 4th Congressional District is Norman, and really southern Oklahoma City and Norman, and then down into serious listener territory in Duncan, Lawton, Fort Sill, Ardmore. And so that is your member of Congress, and he's awesome. So he's had, I don't know if he still has it, but he had a sort of a YouTube show or something you would put on his website, called Cole on Congress, where he'd sit down with a fellow member of Congress. And this was 2007, summer of 2007, so 13 years ago. And here's this is going to be 76-year-old Sam Johnson, still sharp as a tack. And Congressman Cole is asking him, understand, the story of the year in 2007 was how totally war weary America had become. We couldn't believe, you know, I know it's a war on terror, it's a global thing, it's a big thing, it's a lot of heavy lifting, but, you know, we're not done yet. America likes its wars to be wrapped up in 3, 4, maximum 5 years. And it looked like this one was nowhere close to being done. And so Tom Cole asked his friend and mine, Sam Johnson, what the similarities, differences that he saw between Vietnam, a war that Sam Johnson knew well, having fought in it. Sam Johnson also fought in Korea. Trivia question, who was the last member of Congress, the last surviving member of Congress, to have served in the Korean War? Answer is Sam Johnson. And so he flew fighter jets in the 50s, flew fighter jets in the 60s, got blown out of the sky over Southeast Asia, and spent 7 years in the devilish custody of the North Vietnamese. So Sam Johnson knows a thing or two about Vietnam. And you know, pardon me for just a second. One of the photographs that I have on Twitter, if you go back through my Twitter feed yesterday, just most of the pictures are of Sam and me, and there's Sam and me and Lisa at a wonderful event in 2013. just so many memories. But there is one upon the occasion of the death of John McCain, and Senator McCain's casket lay in state in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol, as it should have done. And one of the most poignant moments, as so many people who served with Senator McCain in Congress, there was also a visit by a man who served with Senator McCain in the military in Vietnam in the Hanoi Hilton. And as Sam Johnson, who and the years were starting to get to him, and even as I did events for Sam, you know, through his 60s, here's the weird thing. When I first met Sam Johnson circa 1994, 95, he was about as old as I am now. That's crazy. Early 60s. And so Sam was there. They had some mobility issues, and the picture is of Sam Johnson with his hand out to touch the flag draped coffin of Senator McCain, and Speaker Pelosi actually being of help to Sam Johnson so that he could stand and place his hand on the casket of his friend. It is an all too rare moment when partisanship simply didn't matter. And it's just a great picture. My buddy Scott Braddock put that picture up on his Twitter. It's me retweeting him. That is the reason that I have that on my Twitter feed. This is not really about politics. It's about values, which there's a lot of overlap there, but here's what I mean. Because a lot of times, speaking of Senator McCain, whom we honor and lift it up to heaven and thank him for his service to our country and to our military and all of that, but boy, did the McCain legacy take a bad turn as he was et up by Trump hatred. He was absolutely consumed by Trump hatred, and that meant more to him than honoring some of what he stood for in his own state of Arizona. And the reason I mention this now, and on the occasion of the passing of Sam Johnson, is, you know what the difference is between Sam Johnson and John McCain? So many similarities. Proud members of the military, proud service that included a long, long tenure in the capture of the North Vietnamese. So a lot of similarity. The difference between John McCain and Sam Johnson is that the experience, and they were both tortured horribly. The experience of torture did not shake Sam Johnson's clarity on enhanced interrogations in our war on terror. Because people used to just beat me around the head and shoulders about John McCain, John McCain, John McCain, John McCain. Hey, man, he got tortured, and he says torture is wrong. Well, of course, torture is wrong. Torture, by definition, is something you do that involves, you know, sadism and not a lot of constructive intent. Our enhanced interrogations, which were pretty creative, I'm given to understand, were done to save American lives and bring about some satisfactory resolution to a war that we were fighting to bring about a more stable world. And if there are terrorists plucked from the battlefield who have life-saving information, and we need to get a little creative to get that information, guess what? That's exactly what you do. John McCain didn't want to do that. Sam Johnson did. So every time somebody tried to swing John McCain at me like a bat, said, hey, man, you know, John McCain was tortured. He didn't like those enhanced interrogations. I'd say that's his right. I offer up my friend Sam Johnson, equally tortured, who knows the difference between what the North Vietnamese did to him and anything that we might undertake against terrorists plucked from the battlefield. So in the middle of 2007, here was Sam Johnson sitting down with his friend, 4th District Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma, and Tom had asked him about some comparisons between the current war, which was getting pretty long in the tooth for most Americans, and the war that defined his military service, the war in Vietnam.
Well, the similarity is that the people in the United States don't like long, drawn-out wars, and that's been true ever since our Revolutionary War, every one of them. It's just disheartening to think that they want to pull the plug on our troops. And in Vietnam, when we did that, they had it won. The South was free, and the North had already backed off. And then we decided we were going to pull the plug on money with the U.S. Congress. And consequently, the North sensed a weakness and attacked. And I'm scared to death that same thing will happen here. It may break out in a civil war instead of an overtake, but either way, it's the same event. There is a big difference, though, and I don't think the public realizes that we're fighting a war against terror. It's not a country versus country. It's not communism versus democracy. It's flat-out terrorism, and if we don't think about it in those terms and stay the course and be with our guys and support them, and they're doing a great job, by the way. I think we're making a huge mistake, and it'll affect us in the future.
Sam Johnson, in 2007, 13, and boy, we could do, if we ever get our heads above water with viruses and elections and this and that, it'll be time for a sort of an overarching roundtable. And I don't mind doing it. We can do it sometime. About, because the latest headlines is a little bit more of a troop drawdown in Afghanistan. The President Trump position is that it's time for Afghanistan to get its own house in order, which I agree with if it would work, and I think it can. And it's kind of funny because have this is what haven't we talked about this for have we talked about this for almost 20 years? What does victory look like? What does it look like to win a war on terror? Is it like when there's no more terror? Well, that's never going to happen. It's kind of like a victory over COVID-19. What's that going to look like? When the virus is gone, it's never going to be gone. It'll lie in wait and it'll rear back up. You know, hopefully we can just keep it sort of like we do a bad flu season in the future. I mean, the definition of winning is so nebulous. And so you don't know when you have or if you have, or it's hard to even know exactly what progress looks like, except by one pretty good measuring stick. And that is, you know, if we had more 9/11s, no. Have we had, you know, are we losing vast portions of Middle Eastern territory to ISIS and Al-Qaeda? No. But then you get to the question for the rest of this decade. And that is, can there be some level of stability? I think gone are the days when we can expect sort of Western-style democracies. And I don't know that I ever did. I said, we're never going to turn Iraq into Indiana. We're never going to turn the Middle East into America. It's going to be a godforsaken moonscape with an enormous amount of hothead extremists, terrorists, and jihadists that pretty well have the entire region by the throat forever. Can they be held at bay so that you can have more Middle Eastern nations like Jordan, like Bahrain, like Kuwait, like Qatar, like the United Arab Emirates, rather than nations like Iraq and Iran and Yemen and hotbeds of terror? Is that doable? I think it is. How much American presence is needed to do that? I guess we're about to find out. All right, we're about, boy, speaking of how much presence is needed to calm down all kinds of nonsense, next up, let's take a look at City on Fire, Minneapolis. Unbelievable. Look, if you have a black guy die under the knee of a white cop, and the Minnesota police are going, nothing happened here, and the mayor of Minneapolis is going, what are you all upset about? And the governor and the national political scene and the president and everybody and other police chiefs are saying, hey, man, I'm with the cops here. If that were happening, I would not condone rioting, but I'd kind of understand it. There's no excuse for this. There's no excuse. The world is on George Floyd's side. The world. But you know what? Rioters got to riot. Thieves, rioters, hooligans, looters, they're going to do what they're going to do. And don't even try to tell me that somebody blasting out the window of a Target and running out with as many flat-screen TVs as they can get, that's just a reflection of their anger over George Floyd's death. Nah, That's somebody who wanted a free TV. 923, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. It's been a really busy day. There are three noteworthy musical birthdays, maybe a little more than that, but my top three. There are two of them that are enormously iconic, and you'll hear those in about 6 minutes and then at the end of the show. And one that's just kind of fun, lightweight, kind of a one-hit wonder, but kind of cool. Kylie Minogue, remember Can't Get You Out of My Head? It's about a 20-year-old record. Wow. She is 52. Look at that, 90. 866-660-5759. We're in McKinney. Jeff, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
Great, Mark. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Hey, Mark, the whole world may be on George Floyd's side, but I am not. I am on the side of due process. I think the police officer should get a fair shake before judgment is rushed to. I've seen firsthand how the media tries these kind of situations through, you know, their outlets before, you know, the facts come out.
You're absolutely right. And even in a video that looks this terrible, and it does, I can't imagine what the cop's side of this is. But guess what? I'm not a judge. That's why we have judges. That's why we have trials. I guess at this point, the question is, as we're all left in the court of public opinion, just to sort of react to the way it looks. When I talked about everybody being on George's side, it's like, it looks terrible. It looks absolutely awful. Now,
we
don't have the power to lock anybody up, nor should we. That's what we have courts for. I guess the first turnstile for this is, does this go well beyond a violation of police procedure? Does this get into that realm where you say a police officer has actually committed a crime? What's your thought?
I agree. I mean, nobody's talking about his 2007, you know, a home invasion arrest, and he served time for that.
Well, nor should they.
And he's a big boy. He was 6'6". So we don't know, you know, what transpired.
I know. And here's, you know, and pardon us for stepping into the forbidden, but I've never been on the ground with somebody's knee in my neck, and I hope never to be. I don't think I'm going to die. Was there something health wise about Mr. Floyd that resulted in his death where, you know, 100 other people would not have died? Now, that doesn't make what the cop did okay, and it probably means that there's not a murderous intent here. But is there some level of crime? I don't know, but I'll tell you what, I know I would not mind if there were charges filed. Charges filed simply means there's a reason to believe there might have been a crime here, and there might have been. So, Jeff, thank you. That's always clarity, and that's always anytime presumption of innocence kicks in. Now, but do understand that presumption of innocence is for a courtroom. Presumption of innocence never stops you or me or Jeff or anybody else from saying, man, that guy's guilty or looks guilty or seems guilty, because we're not a court. You know, and that's, you know, you can say whatever you want, or somebody looks innocent or looks like they've been railroaded or whatever. The court of public opinion has big, fascinating, sloppy rules. All righty. Here's a rule. Bottom of the hour newscast. Glad to follow it. Let's get into the world of news with Gordon Griffin, Mark Davis, 932. Grab a line, 866-660-5759. Here's Gordon. All right. The first of our iconic birthdays, Creedence Clearwater Revival. The great John Fogerty is 75. So let's say it's 1969. And you got the 45 RPM single of Proud Mary, because who didn't have that? Yeah, you flip that bad boy over. This is what you get. You get Born on the Bayou, which probably top three or four of my favorite CCR songs ever. I just love Fogerty's phraseology. He's just trying to figure out what the heck is he saying sometimes. This is one of my favorites. What exactly is this? What? Okay, so then I got that interpreted. I can still hear Mama's hound dog barking. I got that. Chasing down a hoodoo there. What the heck is a hoodoo? I'll tell you. Boy, and just the extended solo on that. The single version of Born on the Bayou was about 350, I think. Album cut is 515, and you just got to consume it in its entirety. CCR's Bayou Country, I guess that was their second album. So anyway, CCR, John Fogerty, 75, a hoodoo. all this is free. All this talk show information is free. A hoodoo is it's not really a devil or anything. A hoodoo in Bayou parlance is some magical, mystical, spiritual, non-defined apparition. And so Mama's hound dog was chasing down a hoodoo. All righty, there you go. All right, I'm looking at Alex Perez sitting there on what's left of the streets of Minneapolis. Oh, man. Because here it comes. And as I said, I don't know which is more depressing. Looting, rioting, hooliganism, mass lawlessness. That's pretty depressing. And I feel for shopkeepers. I feel for anybody victimized by these roving hordes of lawbreakers. So I guess that's probably the winning side of the scales, because the other thing that I'm going to mention is just America in 2020, where get ready for a day, and maybe an entire week, and maybe more, where people justify this nonsense, where people say, hey, sometimes if you're angry enough, you just got to riot. Well, I've been angry in my life, and I know. I probably don't even want to head down that paragraph too deeply, because I will never know firsthand what it must feel like to be black in America and see yet another instance of police brutality against someone who shares my skin color. However, I don't have to be black to intellectually and even emotionally appreciate that. You know, I'm not Jewish, but I get the Holocaust. I mean, pardon me for the ultimate ender in that conversation. I'm capable of empathy, all right? And that's what's the worst part of the rioting and the looting in Minneapolis overnight. And by the way, they're not done. It's going to be an interesting day. Oh, can't wait for tonight. I can't wait for night to fall in the Twin Cities tonight. Get ready, cops. And boy, how'd you like to be, you know, how'd you like to be a cop in Minneapolis right now? You know, I mean, it's just a mess. Made messier by the fact that the wheels are turning in a completely advantageous way to get justice for George Floyd. I think charges are absolutely going to be filed against the one particular cop with his knee on his hip, on his head. The other ones, I don't know. I mean, what do you expect of them? I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, if I got four cops standing around and one of them is doing something horribly unseemly or even unspeakable, I would expect the other cop to go, "Hey, dude, what are you doing?" You know, and call a halt to it. Now that sounds totally like the testimony of somebody who ain't never been a cop in his life, and that's why I try to shut up about stuff like that. I'm glad to react to how things look, especially when there are law enforcement people. You know, Chief Renee Hall, former Assistant Dallas Chief Max Guerin, is now the chief out in Rockwall. The chiefs from Argyle to various other locations who said, "Oh, this is bad. This is bad." So I follow their lead in this regard. But now, today, the story is not the terrible thing that happened to George Floyd, first and foremost. The story is, look at these maniacs wreaking havoc. And so all of a sudden the question is, how exactly is the memory of George Floyd benefited by this? How exactly is the cause benefited by this? And the answer is, it's not. And they know it. And they don't care. Because if you pick 100 rioters, 100 looters, and Lord knows you can do that several times over with this crowd, in terms of the number of people engaged in that activity, and you hook them up to lie detectors and say, what was driving you? Would the truthful answer be, "I was really upset about George Floyd"? Or would the answer be, "Hey, it was rioting night, and I wanted to see if I could get a TV or two. Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner. All right. Alex Perez, ABC, out front in the wreckage in the morning hours in Minneapolis.
Those protests started right here at the scene peacefully, but within hours turned very, very violent. Police and riot gear struggling to keep things under control.
Smoke rising above Minneapolis, a part of the city on fire as a second night of protests turning deadly.
We're getting a lot of projectiles from the Target lot, northeast corner, west side of Minneapolis.
Officers are quickly losing control of unruly protesters spilling out from the intersection where George Floyd was stopped by police on Monday.
Tonight was a different night of protesting.
This is John Elder, who is the communications director for the Minneapolis PD.
It was just the night before.
Officers say one man was shot and killed amid the growing chaos in the streets. Crowds descending on this shopping center, leaving multiple stores ransacked, looted, or even set ablaze.
Unbelievable. The video's everywhere. You can see it. Because nothing says, I want justice for George Floyd, like running around the shattered glass of a Target store with armloads of things that you've just stolen. Yeah, nothing says the quest for justice like that.
The mayor of Minneapolis now requesting assistance from the National Guard as he joins the police in pleading for calm.
If people are there, truly there, to honor the memory of the decedent and the family, this isn't how you do it.
Outrage over the death of George Floyd leading to protests around the country. In Los Angeles, a human chain blocking traffic, swarming police cruisers, and smashing in windows.
Yeah, that's always good, too. There's video of a California Highway Patrol car getting its rear window destroyed by people. And let's hook them up, too. Let's hook them up to the lie detector. Are you guys really upset about the death of George Floyd? Oh, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. They are not ambivalent about it. But, ding, 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 little alarm goes off in the head, says, hey, rioting is a happening. There are cop cars to be destroyed, cops to be attacked. I'm in. So, and as for Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, what exactly do you want from a mayor in this? He essentially said, why aren't these cops behind bars? I don't know, due process maybe? Did he exacerbate the situation by with those words? I don't know, and I thus would not say. In fact, I think it may be that Mayor Frey, who's a total hardcore lib, just saying, was trying to maybe keep things calm by identifying with the anger of those who are the most. The most exercised by George Floyd's death. I don't know, whatever it was, didn't work.
Before the officers are able to break through the crowds and escape. And tensions mounting in Memphis as officers and protesters clashed. And this morning,
And by the way, first thing, and this is kind of interesting, furthering my constant proposition that almost nothing is racial anymore, you may think, wait a minute, that's crazy, talk show boy. Almost nothing is racial anymore. It's political. Who's more likely to be in a crowd of rioters? Or in some of the footage there in Memphis? Some of the folks robbing Target. There's all kinds of white people. White people love looting too. There are white people who hate cops too. Who do you think you're more likely to find at some kind of nonsense like this? A crazy white liberal or Alan West? Oh, speaking of Alan, who's my go-to black conservative? Speaking of Alan, you know what Alan West did yesterday? Do you know what Alan West did yesterday? You might think put his feet up and heal his dislocated shoulder and his nearly shattered face after the motorcycle accident at 75 miles an hour. Nope. Alan West and a friend of his went on a 2-mile walk. Dude, I love that man. Bless his heart. All right, finishing up.
On the officers in that disturbing video, ABC News has confirmed the white police officer leaning on Floyd's neck is Derek Chauvin. According to a police watchdog group, Chauvin was among several officers investigated after a fatal shooting in 2006. A grand jury later declined to indict.
Could that be because there was insufficient evidence to indict him? I don't know.
Also in the video, Officer To Tao seen holding back the growing crowd. Records show he was part of an unreasonable use of force lawsuit that was settled out of court in 2017.
So, I mean, are there things you can look at in somebody's background and go, okay, there's that. Is that was that? I guess what's the rationale here? It's like, oh, somebody should have seen this coming. Not necessarily. I'm going to make everybody a deal. I'm going to make a deal. I don't care about, you know, crap George Floyd did. I don't care about stuff Ahmaud Arbery did. You know, that shouldn't have got him shot on the streets like a dog. And I'm not going to obsess over things in these cops' background. If they got resolved or were not indicted or whatever, I'm going to focus on the here and the now and the immediate future of what ought to happen to Officer Chauvin. And boy, how'd you like? And pardon, how'd you like to be him right now? I know George Floyd's dead, but woof! I hope they're keeping him under lock and key, which is exactly where he should be in the minds of many. Oh man! So that's my prayer is for peace and rationality and cooler heads in Minneapolis, as it would be anywhere in any city after anything like this. The wheels of justice are going to turn, man. Now, if the wheels of justice turn and it looks like they're turning horribly unsatisfactorily, okay, let's revisit. But doggone it, man, the wheels are turning. 950, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Released around the Christmas of 1972. Gladys Knight and the Pips, Neither One of Us Wants to Be the First to Say Goodbye. Foreign producer Rhonda K. Moreland, technical guru Shane Bell, news ace Gordon Griffin. God bless our country, our troops, our businesses, our families. God bless the memory of Sam Johnson. Have a fantastic, fantastic rest of your day. See you in the morning at 7. Mike Gallagher next on 660 AM, The Answer.